morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up stories from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. I'm Nikki Ouellette, filling in for Jess Sheldahl. Today is Thursday, September 26th. Today we've got stories on New Zealand mud snails, chronic wasting disease, and radioactive oil waste. Montana's Democratic Senator John Tester announced legislation yesterday he says addresses rising suicide rates among farmers. Rachel Kramer with Yellowstone Public Radio News reports.
Tester's Seeding Rural Resilience Act aims to help farmers and ranchers manage and reduce mental stress amid trade wars, low prices, and uncertainty, with a $3 million public service announcement to destigmatize mental health care. It would also require the U.S. Department of Agriculture to provide voluntary stress management training to agency employees who work directly with agricultural producers. And it would create a task force to determine best practices for responding to farm and ranch mental stress. At a press conference announcing the bill, Tester said the financial burdens brought on by the Trump administration's trade wars has made life harder for agricultural producers.
Look, you sit on a tractor for 10, 14 hours a day and think about all the things that are going wrong in your life, it can screw with your head.
The suicide rate is 45% greater in rural America than in urban areas, according to the National Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And farmers and ranchers are one of the most vulnerable groups.
The fact is, folks who live in Glasgow or Havre face barriers to access to mental health resources than folks living in New York or Los Angeles. They also face isolation. They have to travel further to receive basic health services. They're less likely to be insured. And they may know that there are mental health resources available to them, but they don't know where.
Tester says he'll be introducing the bill to get it into committee, where there will be opportunities for public input. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
Winter conditions have closed part of the Beartooth Pass. The Wyoming side of the pass has closed for the season at the Wyoming state line. Travelers can still drive on U.S. Highway 212 from Red Lodge to the state line, but will have to turn around and return to Red Lodge. The Montana Department of Transportation says the Montana side of the Beartooth Pass is scheduled to close for the season sometime over Columbus Day week, but it could close sooner because of adverse weather. While federal debate rages on over the future of the Endangered Species Act, Montana's representative in the U.S. House says the Trump administration's rollbacks last month don't go far enough. Montana Public Radio's Nick Mott reports.
Republican Greg Gianforte Tuesday introduced a bill that would make it easier to delist species protected by the ESA at a Congressional Western Caucus roundtable in Washington, D.C.
We must restore the ESA back to its original purpose of recovering species, not lining the pockets of environmental extremist groups.
Called the List Act, it was part of a suite of nearly 20 bills announced Tuesday that would weaken Endangered Species Act protections across the country. The legislation comes in the wake of Department of the Interior rules finalized in August that dull the ESA. Critics say those rules paint a bleak future for vulnerable species as biodiversity plummets across the globe. Gianforte and other supporters of ESA changes say the document needs modernization, more efficiency, and more transparency.
It's now become a bludgeoning tool for frivolous lawsuits from special interest groups. Abuse of the ESA is also shutting down our forest management in Montana. It's been weaponized, and now we're at a point where we, instead of managing our forests, we breathe them every summer.
Gianforte blames ESA-related lawsuits over logging projects for more intense wildfires blazing across the West. But environmentalists and forestry experts say a century of federal fire suppression has created dense, overgrown stands at the same time that warmer, drier weather has made matchbooks out of forests. Gianforte also condemns ongoing litigation surrounding the Yellowstone area grizzly bear. The species was delisted in the summer of 2017, but a federal judge restored protections last fall. The case remains bound up in appeals. He introduced a bill last February that would mandate that Congress remove protections for the Bruin instead of the usual delisting pathway through the Department of the Interior. A U.S. House subcommittee Tuesday considered additional legislation that would overturn the Interior's ESA rollbacks. Democratic leaders decried those changes as a triumph of industry interests over ecological good. As the fight plays out along fiercely partisan lines, all proposed bills face uphill battles. I'm Nick Mott, Montana Public Radio.
The first discovery of an invasive snail west of the Continental Divide in Montana is pushing wildlife officials to quarantine a fish hatchery south of Hamilton. A colony of New Zealand mud snails was found at the private commercial fish hatchery last month. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks spokesperson Greg Lemon says they likely hitchhiked to the Bitterroots in shipments from a fish hatchery in South Dakota this and last spring.
First thing we did was quarantine the hatchery so they weren't taking fish out anywhere else, and then we're now working with them on a eradication plan and contacting the pond owners that where they've delivered fish in the past 2 years.
Lemon says the Bitterroot Hatchery stocks about 100 private ponds in western Montana and drains into an irrigation canal. FWP has surveyed sections of the nearby Bitterroot River and Skalkahoe Creek and have not found mud snails there. Invasive New Zealand mud snails are present in the Madison, Missouri, and Yellowstone rivers. They outcompete native mussels, snails, and aquatic insects and can impact food chains of native trout. They've also impacted freshwater supplies. In Australia, they've emerged from home water taps. This year, FWP inspected more than 104,000 boats for aquatic invasive species and intercepted 14 contaminated with zebra and quagga mussels. While the agency found new populations of curly-leaf pondweed and Asian clams, no mussels were found in the 180 water bodies sampled. A fourth hunter survived a grizzly bear attack Tuesday in the western Gravelly Mountains. Rachel Kramer with Yellowstone Public Radio News reports.
The attack happened between the Coal Creek Drainage and Eureka Basin Road, according to a press release from Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. It was about 8 miles south of where three other hunters were injured last week in two separate grizzly bear attacks. The elk hunter from Ohio, whose name hasn't been disclosed, told FWP wardens and Madison County Sheriff's deputies he was walking through blowdown timber when a bear attacked from a very close range. He said he fired multiple shots with a pistol at the bear until it left and was able to meet up with other members of his hunting party. He was treated at the Ruby Valley Medical Center in Sheridan. FWP wardens and U.S. Forest Service law enforcement notified other hunters and campers in the area and began searching for the bear. The investigation is ongoing, and FWP wardens are requesting that people stay out of Coal Creek and Twin Springs area. Morgan Jacobson with FWP Region 3 says hunters are often at higher risk of encountering bears than other recreationists.
Hunters are usually moving quietly across the landscape. Sometimes they could be alone. Sometimes they're wearing cover scents, things like that. And so, you know, those are potential risk factors for hunters.
Jacobson recommends people hunt with a partner or group, have bear spray, and know how to use it.
We recommend that if a hunter harvests, say, an elk, for example, and they need to make multiple trips to pack it out, to separate the entrails from the carcass that you're processing, and then to leave that carcass that you're packing out in an area where you can observe it from a distance as you come back in.
If a hunter sees a bear eating the carcass, Jacobson says to leave the area and call FWP. He says the number of attacks this fall isn't unprecedented, but the number of bear-human conflicts has been on the rise. At least 23 grizzly bears in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem have been killed this year, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
State policymakers in Libby yesterday got an up-close look at how Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is managing chronic wasting disease in the white-tailed deer population in and around town. This comes after the 10th deer tested positive for the disease in the area since the spring. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
What I like to do is try to keep my workstation fairly clean. A lot of people want to set the head on the cutting board.
FWP's Neil Anderson is giving legislators an up-close and personal look at the inside of a decapitated deer head, specifically inside of its throat.
I want to cut a little bit closer here and just get that exposed so I can see the esophagus and you can see the neck. And if you look, you can see there's a little bit of connective tissue right here, and that's where I want to go.
Anderson is after the lymph nodes, which hold high concentrations of the prions or misfolded proteins that cause CWD. They'll be sent off for testing.
And that's about how big they are. They're about the size of a large kidney bean, if you will.
The disease is primarily transferred through animal-to-animal contact, but it can spread through feces, urine, and contaminated plant life. State lawmakers and members of the public that sit on the Interim Legislative Environmental Quality Council are here to get a better understanding of FWP's approach to managing CWD. EQC has oversight of it and other state agencies. Council member and Libby House Representative Steve Gunderson says he wants his counterparts to understand management for many reasons, but wants them to specifically keep in mind the economy of an area without much industry.
And Lincoln County is one of the premier hunting destinations, and if we don't get a handle on the CWD problem, it could devastate our whole hunting economy.
Libby isn't the first location in the state where CWD has been detected, but with 10 confirmed cases in town since this spring, it's becoming more likely that the disease has been in the area for some time. That could make management difficult. FWP hopes to keep the disease's prevalence under 5% of the deer population. FWP disease ecologist Emily Almberg says Libby being an urban area adds another layer of difficulty.
The one issue is that Libby is a pretty high density deer population, which is a little different from some of the other places we found it in the state. And so those conditions are conducive to transmission, pretty intense transmission, which could be driving prevalence, you know, higher and faster than we might see other places.
In order to understand the full scope of the disease's prevalence in the area, FWP plans to sample 400 deer in town and within a 10-mile radius. Anderson, who was showing EQC members the sampling process, says the agency has already begun trapping deer in town.
There's been some just general concern about, you know, how we're going to handle deer, and even some concern about, you know, we're going to be removing some does and orphaning fawns.
But Anderson says overall, most residents have been supportive. Some deer harvested during the ongoing archery season have come rolling into sampling stations as well. But rifle season, which begins in late October, will likely account for most of the agency's samples. FWP isn't the only one ramping up sampling efforts in the region. Idaho and British Columbia game managers are also stepping up their efforts this fall in response to the detections in Libby. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Earlier this year, Montana proposed quadrupling the upper limit of radioactive oil waste that could be disposed at certified sites. Yellowstone Public Radio News' Kayla DeRoche reports from a public hearing about the proposed rule change in Glendive.
The Montana Department of Environmental Quality is drafting its first comprehensive guidelines to regulate how landfills receive, dispose of, and hold on to technologically enhanced, naturally occurring radioactive waste, or TNORM, a byproduct of oil and gas operations like fracking. DEQ is proposing a maximum of 200 picocuries per gram at the facility gate, with a facility average of 50 picocuries per gram annually. That's up from a previous proposal that capped all TNORM disposals at 50 picocuries per gram. Rick Thompson is DEQ's Solid Waste Management Section Supervisor.
We listened to your comments the first go around, and we appreciated those to the point where our chief legal said to let those sunset and start over. And that's why we're here again. So our intent is to get your input in the rule writing and to do the best we can.
About 70 people attended this meeting, which at times turned tense and emotional. More than a dozen people, mostly members of the environmental advocacy organization Northern Plains Resource Council, read comments from prepared statements. During an informal question and answer session before the hearing, Carol Nielsen asked Thompson why Montana would set TNORM limits higher than those of North Dakota, which she said might tempt businesses based in North Dakota to dump their TNORM waste in Montana. North Dakota's limit is 50 picocuries per gram.
What is it doing for the taxpayer of Montana to increase this like this or allow this?
Well, one of the things, and it's saw it in the rules, one of the in the statement of reasonable necessity, for that issue is to ensure that the occasional higher load actually gets disposed of in a licensed facility versus being disposed of illegally.
There's currently only one established landfill accepting TNORM in the state, Oaks Disposal in Glendive. Some of the other proposed regulations detail protections and monitoring measures. Those include requiring the owner to conduct random inspections of the incoming T-norm loads and install a system to stop stormwater from mixing with waste during storms. It also proposes hiring a third party to monitor groundwater on a quarterly basis. Laurel Clausen asked for more third-party monitoring and sampling.
What we'd like is unannounced inspections, more regular inspections. I'm not sure what they are now, quarterly, I think. I think monthly would be awesome. More than just reviewing paperwork, which is what's in the current draft. Anyone, especially an entity motivated by profit, is capable of cooking the books.
Alan Olson, executive director of the Montana Petroleum Association, also stepped up to the mic.
First of all, I'd like to thank the department staff for the time spent working through a process to effectively and reasonably regulate a segment of solid waste that has appeared to draw a rather large emotional and somewhat fear-based response. The solid waste being proposed for regulation under these rules are naturally occurring elements found everywhere in our everyday life.
DEQ writes that ingesting, touching, and inhaling T-norm could have negative health effects. DEQ is scheduled to hold another public hearing on October 10th in Helena. The comment period on the proposed T-norm regulations ends October 21st. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on news of the day. I'm Nikki Ouellette, filling in for Jess Sheldahl. Thanks for listening.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.